Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we've got a good CarCast coming up for you. We're going to talk a little bit about the Durango Hellcat SRT. We're going to talk what's going on with Nissan, a new Pathfinder, new Frontier, and a number of other things coming up in just a second. Before we get started, let me tell you about Empire Covers. Nowadays, cars are designed to keep you safe on the road, but are you providing the same protection for your car off the road? Well, Empire Covers has you covered. It's high-quality, affordable covers engineered to protect against rain, UV rays, tree sap, pollen, pretty much anything that would normally damage your vehicle's paint. And for premium protection, try the American Armor Cover. It's proudly made in their Kentucky factory, and they have covers for RVs, boats, motorcycles, and more. All the covers come with a free multi-year warranty. And right now, you can get this great deal. You can get free shipping and an extra 15% off your entire order by using the promo code CARCAST. Just go to empirecovers.com/CARCAST. Use the promo code CARCAST. That's empirecovers.com/CARCAST. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator. DeAndre here with Bill Goldberg and our friend Alistair Weaver from Edmonds. Welcome back.
Alistair!
Good
morning, gentlemen.
We were just having a nice little conversation off the air leading up to this wonderful event. All about wrestling.
Actually, for all the listeners out there, we have done a handicap tag match between myself at WrestleMania next year against Alistair and Matt.
It's a triple threat match.
You got a year to bulk up, guys.
What? You mean bigger than I already am? How much further can I possibly go?
Well, I'll see if I can get Mysterio in there.
Rey Mysterio would be great.
Bill, if you put me and Matt together, we still wouldn't arrive at you.
Well, you'd look like the Three Stooges when they did the gimmick and they had the long coat. You'd kill them.
We were talking about some of the British wrestlers from back in the day. Not as popular in the U.S., except we did have British Bulldog. We did mention that. And there was a couple of others, but British Bulldog in the day was our guy. And turns out Alistair went to a live wrestling event. It wasn't official WWE, but you went to the bootleg version, the British bootleg version with warm beer.
This was before WWE or WWF, whatever. This was real people. I was just saying, I'm going to send Bill, we're talking about this offer. I'm going to send Bill the YouTube clip of Giant Haystacks against Big Daddy from Wembley Stadium back in 1981. And Bill, Big Daddy's real name was Shirley Crabtree. Yeah, this guy was like 20 stone and kind of belly flopped his way around the ring.
Yeah, wait to see this.
It's awesome. Nobody bothered getting ripped, but it was amazing entertainment. You know, every night somebody would be carried out, and then they'd be wrestling again next day. And it was cult. It was like Saturday lunchtime. Before you went to a soccer match, you sat down and you watched wrestling as the family on a Saturday lunchtime. It was huge in the UK. Big Daddy, Shirley Crabtree.
Oh my God!
You know, nobody got rips in those days.
We had some very successful wrestlers that would sort of belly flop their way around the ring back in the day. Rikishi, he was not spry. George the Animal Steel was actually very
Yokozuna.
Yeah. There's been some. There's some big boys in the ring. You know, and you know what? To tell you the truth, though, you know who really did like a 180 was Big Show. Like, Big Show was kind of big and fat and a little slow in the ring. He's more big slow, which I think that's what they joked about him for a long time. And now Big Show's jacked and leaned out, and you know, I don't know, kind of takes away a little bit from his 500 pounds in the ring, because now he's probably like 120 pounds less. But
yeah, but now he's more concerned with his health a little bit more.
That's right. Yeah, now he's, you know, he's made some money and he's gotten a little older and he's getting a little better in shape. But anyway,
the current one is Mark Henry, the Hall of Famer at WWE.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's just dropped like 80 or 90 pounds for an in ring return. So I'm very excited to see him out there too.
Yeah, that is good, because that's a hard life when you've got that much time in the ring and on the road. You know, Anyway, we've got some good stuff to talk about. Let me just hit Dodge real quick. Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So visit your local Dodge dealer or schedule a test drive today. Speaking of Dodge, and this is not part of the ad. This is just what it is. I finally got the Durango SRT Hellcat. I drove it here. I've been driving it for a couple of days. And it is it's everything you expect it to be. And then everything you were expecting it not to be is also accurate, right? It's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's,
but it is what it is. You know what you're getting.
Right? Yes. It's big. You know, it's a big SUV. It definitely does things it shouldn't be capable of doing. 5,500 plus pounds. You know, sure, it's a little long in the tooth. These platforms that we're riding on, Challenger, Charger, Durango, they did a pretty good job on, I thought, on the interior, Alistair. Maybe you had a chance to peek inside one. The new infotainment system is big. It's flush in the dash. It's not a tacked-on screen. It seems to actually work pretty well. It's pretty intuitive. All of the onboard performance stuff, when you hit that SRT button, configuring, you know, your street mode, your track mode, all of that stuff is very cool. You know, the interior feels good. It feels clean. It's not overly luxurious or anything. But I'll tell you, Dodge has figured it out. In that, just
see the smile on your face. That's all they're selling.
You know what it is? Is we all have to admit the engine is addicting. It doesn't matter what you put that engine in. Right. You put that Hellcat engine in anything and you just grin ear to ear. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense. Like, they're putting it in stuff that doesn't even make sense, but they're like, why not? People will buy it. And I can see why. It gets 9 miles to the gallon, but it's so much fun. You can't keep your foot out of it. The all wheel drive makes it way fun, right? Because you're way more confident. But I don't know. It's like you're sitting up high and there's definitely some body roll and the brakes are a little soft. They seem to perform well, but they just feel a little soft. And so you're like, it's definitely one of the ones like you go, oh, this thing is so much fun. I can't wait to get on it hard. But you know, when you do, you kind of want to roll down the window and go, clear the road. Everybody get out of the way, because I have no idea what this thing is going to do. Right. Yeah. Like
ride just launch control on an 840 brake wheel, or, you know, wheel horsepower freaking with 37s on it.
Yeah.
And all wheel drive. I'm probably getting 4 to 6 miles of the gallon with you.
Well, because you can't keep
let's be perfectly honest.
Because you can't keep your foot out of it when you get it, right? So
it's not possible. It's not possible. But to buy it and think that it's anything but what they advertise, you're a moron. Because it is what it is. It's pretty plain and simple. I mean, it's as ridiculous as they come, but damn, is it fun.
Yeah,
you just need bigger dogs, Matt. That's the issue. If you go to Durango, you're going to need bigger dogs.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, well, we got the little tiny ones, and they'll get lost in the third row seat back there somewhere. So I don't know. So my thought on it, though, is for me, the Durango being the three row high performance version is probably a little too much SUV. They did a good job of knocking some money off of it compared to the Trackhawk, the Jeep Trackhawk. But for my money, I felt like the Trackhawk was sized a little bit better. It felt a little bit more like, you know, like when you – not that price is a concern, but a little more like the super SUVs, the Urus and, you know, Lamborghini and stuff like that. They seem a little more track hawkish. Durango is in a league of its own. Just the size of it, the weight of it, the three row length of it, and the amount of power and it puts down is kind of in a league of its own. I don't think there's anything else quite that large and anywhere nearly that quick.
That's right? Why they did it.
GLS 63 AMG, but that is like almost twice as much money.
At least.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So BMW has an X7, but the X6 or whatever, the X6, you know, coupe or M competition is fast. You know, it's got to be every bit as fast as the Lamborghini. The Audi RS Q8, you know, again, it's very much the Lamborghini, the Urus. But so the only other thing out there that is big, you're saying, is the Mercedes. Is it?
It is. It is. But, you know, that's a tournament. I mean, the weird thing is, like, the Trackhawk feels like a kind of Lamborghini for a fraction of the price. I mean, $80,000 for a Durango is still a ton of money for a Durango, though. I know the interior's got a bit of Alcantara and it's got a shed load of horsepower.
Try 102 for a truck.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. 102. Well, honestly, I think the Durango I'm driving is 88,000. I think the Monroney is like 88,000. And that's no sunroof, by the way. Like, not that I want the extra weight above me. I already feel like
it'll make all the difference. That,
yeah, right. Yeah. At 5,500 pounds or 5,500 and change. Anyway, it's a blast to drive. I'm going to fold down the seats and I'm going to load up a bunch of car parts in it because I can, now that I have it here, have a little more fun with it. I'm actually am going to be swapping it out in the next few weeks for some of the hot, like all of the RS Audis, including the Q8, the RS Q8 or Q8 RS. And I can't really be sure of what it's called these days, but that should be fun as well. But anyway, I wanted to touch on that. I'm going to get some photos. I'm going to try to get at least a couple of you know, videos I'll throw up on Instagram just so you can hear it as well. Of course, it does what you expect it to do. It has a good sound. It has a good muscle car sound to it. It's got that supercharger whine. Actually, I kind of like the supercharger whine to be a little louder in this thing. I was like, I want a little bit more whine, not just so for me, but for everyone on the streets walking, going, what the hell is that big red? It's bright red. And someone goes, hey, is that a fire truck? It looks like a fire truck. I was like, it might as well be, because when you see it, you want to get out of the way when it comes down the road. But
we have a film coming out on it on Friday. I think it's Friday, Matt, actually, depending on when you're listening to this. But it's Friday with Alana. Took one down to the drag strip as well. So she took it drag racing. So that's kind of fun.
I mean, that's what it's for, right? I mean, that's kind of what it's for. I will tell you this. It's actually pretty comfortable to drive. I was trying to dig into it a little bit, and they have retuned the suspension and stuff. And I think what they're doing, Alistair, which is interesting, is they're doing a little more spring and a little less sway bar, like to get it to go around, like, you know, your autocross or your slalom. You know, you can add sway bar, but sway bar does stiffen up ride as well. So I think they're trying to not overdo it on sway bar, but are doing maybe a little bit heavier spring, a little bit stiffer spring, and finding the right balance, because you're trying to control 5,500 plus pounds, right? Not just the power itself, but the amount of weight. And somehow they got the power transfer to work well. I get it, it's all-wheel drive, but the way it shifts weight, I mean, I think Dodge told us 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, and I believe some people are getting quicker than that. I'm not sure what tire they're running or what conditions, the weather or altitude, but they're getting less than 3.5, you know, 3-4. You know, I'm not sure what Alana ended up doing during the drag race, but do we know what she ran in that thing? Because these things are running 1170s, maybe.
Yeah, I forget. I think she was, I think in her words, it was like a really busy night, and she never got a perfect run. But I think she was in the 11s somewhere.
Yeah.
The film's, I'd say it's like a 10-minute film. It's kind of a review as well of the car. So I think that's out of, if you check out the Edmunds YouTube channel on Friday, I think that is. So, I mean, she loved it. And it's just kind of a hoot, isn't it? And I think we all recognize these cars are on borrowed time. So buy them while you can.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's fun. I know we appreciate their sponsorship of the show, but I wanted to drive this thing as much as we've been hitting it in the ads and stuff. But anyway, more to talk about. Let me just tell you guys real quick about Geico. You own your home and you rent your home. Either way, You know, it could be a lot of work, but we know what's easy, and that's bundling your policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. So visit GEICO.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. Alistair, what have you been driving? What have you been up to?
All sorts of stuff, really. I had a weekend in an M4, which was fun. Took it up to, have you been to a place called Solvang, which is this weird little Danish town in California?
Solvang.
It's a correct. Solvang, sorry.
Solvang, yeah. There's some wine tasting up there. There's a lot of cuckoo clocks for some reason. There's a lot of cuckoo clocks in the stores.
It's the weirdest place in the world. It's like a little Danish community in California. Yeah. But
I love that you're like, have you ever heard of this Solvang place? Yeah. Everybody out here, we've all gone there at one point in our lives for some wine tasting, usually. And of course, the wine. What's the wine movie that I'm thinking of? Come on, Chris. What's the
Sideways?
One? Sideways. Sideways was basically there with
Paul Giamatti. Is that right?
Paul Giamatti, who's fantastic.
Giamatti.
Right? Yeah.
I'm doing well this morning.
Yes. All right. So you got an M4, and I remember you texting me last night, and I said, I certainly hope it performs better than it looks.
That's the issue, isn't it? I mean, everybody just talks about the looks, and I don't get it because it's hard to get past that. I mean, I've got some thoughts on how it drives as well, but I don't know why BMW cyclically feels the need to go off in these kind of weird design tangents. They did it with Chris Bangle's designs back in the sort of early 2000s. And then here we are with a current generation. And if you go back to like the 80s E30 M3, which I remember like growing up watching racing, it was a beautiful car. And even the generation that you own, Matt, was a really pretty thing and quite understated and elegant. And this thing just feels like over-designed, and that nose, I'm sorry, I saw it in concept form. It's here in video. I just can't. Yeah, I mean, this thing was dark gray, which at least detunes it a little bit. But I wouldn't buy one. I wouldn't buy one simply on the appearance, and that's kind of a weird thing to say. I know we buy cars because we lust after them and stuff, but I just think it's not only is it controversial, I just don't think it's good design. And I remember having dinner with Ian Callum, Jaguar's famous design director, once. He said, it's like, all right, going off at a tangent, but make sure the design is well executed. I don't even think it's that.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. And I always question how something like this can get past so many people in the approval process. You know, it's like, you know, a designer can hit it, but then what? And then it goes to the executives, it goes to engineers, it goes to hundreds of people, and then it goes to the marketing team, and the marketing team's like, what do you expect me to do with it? like, how do I even present it? You know, like, how am I going to, like, sort of, what sort of, you know, like, think of all the, you know, the press drives and things like that we've been on, and you especially over the years and years and years, like, what is that speech you get from BMW going, hey, welcome to the ride and drive event for the M4. We can't wait for you to not really talk about its looks, but really to talk about its performance. You know, it's interesting because, yes, everybody's talking about it. And normally that's a good thing, right? But this isn't Kanye running up on stage during the Grammys, you know, and for that little pop. This is something people have to spend a lot of money on and live with for a long time and have their friends see them drive it.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically $100,000. The one I was in was a competition, and that's basically $100,000 car. And yeah, I don't see why BMW needed to do that. I get it if you're like an emergent brand and you got to make some noise and take some risks and maybe polarize opinion a bit. And I kind of think that Jaguar, for example, should have been doing more of this. But BMW, like an M car, I just don't feel like you need to do it. I mean, the other thing, because you're asking about like what it's like to drive. I mean, it's monstrously fast. But for me, it's also because it's got so fast and so big and so heavy and everything else, it feels more like what I remember an M5 being. So, you know, like I grew up in M3s, and the point of an M3 was it was kind of lithe and agile and a bit smaller and, you know, it was a little bit more precise on turning and things like that. And this thing's now got so powerful and so big, and the tires have grown and everything else, and all the electronics to handle all the power, that it feels more like an M5, that it's beautifully executed. The engineering is terrific, but you have lost that sense of, you know, little lightweight agility and all the rest of it. If you want that, you now have to go to the M2, not the not the M3, M4, because that's kind of where the M2 still is. But so for me, I recently drove an M8 competition as well, which, you know, is another 70 grand. That thing was 170,000. But the M4 now feels almost indistinct from the M8 in terms of it just being a big, heavy beast of a car. I mean, a nice everyday thing, but it's kind of gone in a different direction. And you can only drive it at night, obviously.
Do you recall?
Or with the bra.
Yeah, right. Do you recall what it weighs? What does an M4 weigh now?
Oh, I'd have to look that up, Matt. I know we had it. I know we had it at the track, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
My my neighbor to my warehouse is I forgot the name of the company. He makes, you know, body kits and flares and stuff for a lot of the import cars. He's got a McLaren in there. He's got an E46 BMW, a few things like that. And he's already on it. Like, I saw him like scanning the front end of an M4 the other day. And I go, "Hey, you going to change the beak on that thing?" He's like, "I'm going to get so rich." Because everyone, you know, if he makes it work, you know, he's going to sell a million of those goddamn things. It seems like everybody's going to want to change the nose of that thing if he can get it, you know. But it's, there's so much stuff packed behind the front of that grill. It's like, you know, if you tried to kind of narrow it down and smaller grill and all that kind of stuff, it's like, can you do it? Will all that stuff fit behind the grill? Are you limiting the amount of air? Like, there's just a lot to consider other than just a cosmetic change. If he could pull it off, that would be very interesting. But
yeah, I managed to look it up, Mike. It's just under 4,000 pounds. It's about 3,900 pounds. So it's 503 horsepower. Just over 500 horsepower. And, you know, tons of electronics. And there's some really cool stuff. I didn't get a chance because I was only driving on the road to play with the drift mode monitor. It's got a little gadget inside it which will actually assess your drifts. So I was pretty disappointed not to get it to a track and try that. We've got a film coming up actually that we're due to shoot in a few weeks where I think we're going to have one and go play with that mode and a few other things. So yeah, stand by for that one. But I mean, it's a good thing. It's beautifully executed, but it just feels, it's a load of money, and it just feels like they've gone away a little bit from what I remember them as growing up.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, 4,000 pounds, just under 4,000 pounds, kind of seems like where we are with our sporty coupes these days, right? Like, you know, I was actually expecting it to be a little heavier than that. I mean, certainly not what it used to be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you had to pick it, what does a Boxster or a 911 weigh these days? You know, the 911 seemed to have gotten pretty big. And you know, a Cayman, the Cayman's got to be 3,400, right? And a 911's got to be 38.
A 911 is 30, yeah, just under 3,400 starting out, and then obviously it gets heavier as you go up the as you go up the range. What's a Cayman? Cayman, bear with me, caller. Cayman weight is about 2,900.
Oh, so both of those cars are lighter than I thought they would be, which I guess, you know, that's
makes sense.
That's what you're getting with all the Porsche engineering, right? Is you're, you know, they got to be able to cut some weight and do some stuff like that. You know, like, weight makes a big difference. You know, the other car that I was driving recently was the Lexus RCF, yeah, RCF Fuji Edition, and you know, it's basically the RCF with the same power, a little bit revision. They put a lot of carbon fiber, the hood, the deck lid, the wing, and stuff like that. They took a little weight off of it, and it was just so they could go from like 4.1 or 4.2 0 to 60 to 3.9. You know, and it's good and it's fun, and they added, I don't know, $25,000 to the price, because it's, I think it's like $100,000 for that car, and the normal one's probably 75. Maybe 80,000, somewhere.
Yeah,
in that
not range. Even, I don't even sure it's that. I think it's like late 60s, isn't it? An RCF, but
yeah. So
yeah, they're a cool. it's still a cool looking thing.
It is kind of cool looking, and it is kind of it was kind of fun, and it, you know, the point about that car is, because we were talking about you know, the Durango being silly as well. I got into this Lexus, and this thing has nearly 500 horsepower with a naturally aspirated V8, right? Which you just don't really see anymore. And I don't know if it was just non-existent or the fuse was pulled or a button was set, but it did not have that very annoying start-stop feature at every stoplight. So they're like, hey, I'm throwing a V8 in it, and that be damned on the start-stop function, because we have the V8 in there. It's like, we don't even care if that start-stop feature saves 1 mile per gallon or whatever the overall thing is. They're like, it's fine. They're like, we're all in on this for as long as we can go, and that's probably, you know, 8 months left before we have to change all of that stuff, right? I mean, you know, things are coming down quickly where we can't really have these things anymore, so... I see why
you
the
in
car
California.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. Well, I read this morning
that
getting a little governor change possibly. Yeah.
Did you see on the Tesla earnings report that they made $500 million in selling carbon credits?
I did see that. That was actually interesting because you mentioned this before, saying their carbon credits that they sell are a big source of income, and they've hit sort of an all-time record for them financially, over $500 million in carbon credits, which basically what put them over the top and made them profitable. Of course, the next sentence in that press release or article was the amount of profit that they did make, which, you know, is something. That triggered the next big stock option thing for Elon Musk. So he added $11 billion to his net worth because he had his company make a little bit of money. And he's like, well, I don't know. Whatever the source of revenue is, it doesn't really matter. Money's money and the books are the books. And if I can get 500 and something million dollars in carbon credits and that pushes them to a $400 million profit, he gets $11 billion out of it.
There was a time when Porsche was making more money as a hedge fund than it was out of making cars. And I think Tesla's in the same place. So they make zero money out of actually producing cars, and they're making all their money out of Bitcoin and carbon credits and everything else. I mean, it's kind of...
I mean, look...
It's really weird.
There's no denying he's not a smart man. Like, he knows what's going on. He's smart. He's a little outspoken and a little wacky, but so many geniuses are. But Just a wild ride that whole company is on. But speaking of Tesla, I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at what the Mach-E is doing, because the GT and GT Performance are out, right? And we saw the base price for the Mach-E GT is going to be $61,000. That's with the $1,100 destination, so it's like $59,000 something. Then you add it up, it's $61,000, and the GT Performance Edition will be $66,000. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we're looking at 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds for the Mach-E GT and 3.5-ish for the high performance pack. 61,000, 66,000, and range of 250 for the GT and 235 for the performance edition. Does that sound right?
I think that's pretty good, Matt.
And I don't have notes in front of me. I'm just going back, going based on what I was
You're
being pulled up.
Talking about.
What were your thoughts on the range? Because we talked about some of the cars that did well and some of the ones that underperformed. Where do you think the Mach-E falls in to that? You know, you were saying that Porsche is one of the best. Like, whatever their estimate is, they crush their estimate by a noticeable margin, a significant margin, you know, something worth bragging about type margin.
We just actually this week published our test of when they do Mackie, there's a California Route 1 version, which is designed to be the long range. You just put Mackie in so that people will laugh at me.
I was waiting. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
I'm quietly giggling.
It's like when James May says cock on the Grand Tour. It's just like the same joke every week.
Exactly.
We just tested the Route 1 version, which is the long, which is basically designed to maximize the range. That did 344 miles on our test, which is 1 mile short of the record, which is currently held by a Model 3 long range. But the Ford overperformed its EPA by around 12-13%. I mean, we talked about this before. Teslas tend not to. Teslas don't, and the Ford does. So it's about 12% over the EPA range. So that was a good result. So generally, the Mackie performs well in our range testing, and he's pretty efficient too. And obviously, with the GT, you're trading. It's a balancing act. So you're kind of adding performance, taking away a bit of range. But 230, 250 miles, they're both in a decent place. I think these things over time will normalize at about 300 miles. I think you'll end up with 250, 300 miles being the norm for most cars, and then the really high end stuff might have more range.
Is 250 miles a satisfactory range, or is it a number that we're going to get accustomed to living with because that's where we are with technology?
I think it's all about infrastructure. I mean, that's the issue. I mean, most people who buy an EV, you have it, charge it up at home, you plug it in overnight. So 250 miles is ample. I mean, how many times do you drive more than 250 miles in a day? And then if you are road tripping it, it's a question of where are the fast chargers and how do you, how reliable are they and everything else. And that's where Tesla has a really big lead at the moment, because the supercharger network is really strong. And then the Electrify America and everything else, charge point stuff is just not as, it's not as good. So we've got some more stuff coming out on this. So, but it will catch up, and the infrastructure will only get better. But that's the thing. I mean, for most people, 250, 300 miles, if you're charging at home, that's probably that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. What else is, have you been, getting into? We were talking about a few other cars on the way. I don't know if you had a chance to drive GT3, but you've been driving a few other things, right?
Yeah, GT3 is coming. We've got something special coming up, probably the GT3. GT4, we had actually, first time I drove a GT4, I drove it very briefly, which is the Cayman. And all the focus is on the port on the 911, but actually that Cayman GT4 is such a thing.
Yeah.
And, 70, 100, and that's like 100 to 120, whereas a GT3 these days is getting on 200. And actually a GT3 is two seats and the GT4 is two seats. And, it's mid-engine, not rear-engined. And, yeah, that's a fabulous thing. And it kind of gets a bit overlooked. But, yeah, that was a beautiful car.
You know, when the previous Cayman GT4 came out, I, you're right. I was looking at that car going, obviously you're getting a certain size of car. It's going to be tough to fit in for some people. But I was like, 100 grand. I mean, this is kind of hot Corvette territory for 100 grand. Like when you start loading it up, and do you go after something like that, or do you go after Porsche GT4, right? Cayman GT4, and I knew a friend that in Texas, I believe, that bought one. And absolutely loved it, but I don't know what the long term sort of drivability comfort was. It bumpy? Was it not? Was it like the older version, like Boxster R, sort of lightweight, kind of loud, a little bumpy? But I'm not sure what it's like to drive the GT4 these days.
Well, I mean, the reason with all the electronic damping, I mean, it's like a lot of Porsches. They're actually pretty comfortable. Because the damping technology's got so good, and it's also pretty switchable. Also, the Cayman's got quite a lot of space. I mean, I'm 6'4", and I don't have the seat all the way back. Hmm. So, and then you've got the trunk in the front, the trunk in the back. So it's pretty, it's pretty usable. And then there's the spider version if you want the, if you want the roof down. So I've always been a fan of the Cayman, and, that's got effectively a version of the GT3 motor in it anyway. So it's, and they hold their value so well. which is you know, is another big thing. Those specialist ones, as all the GT cars do. So yeah, it's a nice tool, and I kind of like the GT4 because it feels a little bit more intelligent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's a little bit kind of like a nod to those in the know.
Yeah. Okay. I want to hear what else you've been getting into. Let me tell you guys about our friends at BD Power, their TS Booster. So say goodbye to that dead, laggy throttle pedal feeling and enjoy quicker response and acceleration with the BD Power TS Booster. The TS Booster amplifies the signal between the throttle pedal and the ECM for quicker reaction time, forcing your performance curve to occur sooner. They have factory connections. I think it just goes right into the OBD2 port. You just plug it right in, which means it's a painless install, and it gives you 6 acceleration levels and a security mode if you want that. There's no need to program it. You just take the TS Booster, sophisticated AI, you plug it in. It does the work for you, learning the appropriate settings and your particular application and based off of your throttle input. So it does it all pretty much for you. It's a nice little fun little thing you can be able to just plug in and make the car just feel so much peppier all around. Cars and trucks, they've got it for all kinds of stuff. So check out tsbooster.com and enter the code CARCAST for $50 off your purchase. That's actually a pretty good deal. So tsbooster.com, enter code CARCAST for $50 off. Yeah, I've got one of these at home, by the way. I just don't have a modern car to plug it into. Ooh, I should just plug it in. I should plug it into this Durango Hellcat and see what happens. And then I'll give it back. and then see what happens.
Got to test out the product.
Yeah, I got to kind of test out. Actually, I got to look up the part number and see if it works with that, because there's some – when you buy one of those, it works on a bunch of different models, but there are like 3 or 4 different part numbers that you need, because there are only so much data they can put into one of those. But I'm kind of curious to plug that thing into the Durango and see what it does, because that's what the Durango needs, is to be peppier off the line.
Absolutely. Maybe it'll increase the fuel mileage.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it does that at all. It might be the opposite. But, you know, I was sitting on the freeway on the way here. I think I was getting 12. I was getting double-digit numbers.
Yeah, that's 3 times as much
as what you're getting right now. What else has been going on? You've been, did you say you drove the Bentley?
Oh, we had a little bit of fun in the Flying Spur sedan. Yeah. I also, Matt, while you were reading the ad, I was checking. Actually, our Durango Hellcat video went live this morning. It shows what I know, right? It wasn't Friday, it was Wednesday. We have 2 videos a week. I never remember what order they're in. So that's up and live. Yeah, we had a play in the Bentley, which is, I just love those big, powerful sedans. You know, mm-hmm. We do, everything's SUVs these days, but you get back into those sedans and you think, yeah, it's just a nice, you know, it's just a nice place to be. Talking about, we also had a look at the Mercedes EQS, which is this, you know, which is Mercedes' big, like Tesla Model S rival, big statement car for them. Haven't driven it yet, but had a had a good look at that. I mean, it's just the tech they're throwing at that thing's extraordinary, and it looks pretty as well. I think they've done a really nice job with it. Nissan Pathfinder on a different level. Carlos had a look at that. For us, these are all on our YouTube channel, and then Kia Sorento. I mean, no brand for me. There is no brand or partner brands doing better than Hyundai Kia at the moment. Their design stuff is great. Their cars are great. And you think how far that company's come in the last like 20 years, it's crazy. Sorento's a really good thing. Telluride, we love. You know, some of the new little EVs coming out, it's they're in a great place. And when what they did, you know, they hired an Audi designer in Peter Schreier, and then they hired the chassis guy from BMW, and suddenly the cars look good and drive well. You're like, who knew?
It's funny because when we look at it that way, you go, oh, we're going to bring in this designer. We bring in this chassis guy. Well, there's tens of thousands of people at the company. It's like that's an incredible amount of power for each one of these guys to have over their department and the influence of the vehicle. I guess maybe that's a hell of a lot of power, whoever that BMW designer is over there designing the beak on that M4, because he seemed to get thousands and thousands of people on board with that thing.
Well, the guy running Hyundai and Kia Design now, because Chris moved on to bigger things in the company, is Luke Donkervolker, which is an amazing name, but also he was at Lamborghini. You know, and this guy's gone from Lamborghini and he's now, I forget which Lambo he did. I think he did the Huracan, or maybe he did the Murcielago, and then, you know, pops up at Hyundai Kia and doing great things for them. So, you know, but it is amazing, man. I mean, we've all met like senior execs of these companies, and they are rock stars. And it's amazing how much power and influence single individuals have in companies, as you say, of like tens of thousands of people. These are, you know, and a lot of it centers on these one, you know, a handful of individuals, which is why they get paid, you know, insane amounts of money and, you know, treated like royalty.
It is interesting how the more popular they become, when the media starts picking out people within the company and turning them into high profile, they went from executive to high profile faces of the company, right? And along with that comes, you got to imagine, a big paycheck. You know, it's
a big paycheck and a big ego.
Yeah, a big paycheck and a big ego. That's for sure. I do want to touch on the Nissan stuff. This is a company that obviously over here, all the legacy stuff, all the vintage stuff, fans of. We've got a bunch of them in the other room, Adam Carolla's collection. And I am interested, and I always love what the GTR was. I always, I do like what's happening with the new Z. I think it's going to be interesting. But Nissan as a company, a lot of restructuring. COVID kind of hit them hard. They have to be sort of a leaner a company, and to be able to come out with new product that's interesting. And so I kind of want to get your thoughts, and I know Carlos Lago on your team has looked at the new Nissan Pathfinder pickup truck, and I'm sorry, the Pathfinder SUV and the Nissan Frontier pickup truck. Now, both of those, you know, I don't think they're completely, you know, clean sheet of paper redesigns. I think whatever platform it's built on has evolved over the years. I think the engines are pretty much still on par with what they have for several years. And they just kind of stepped up, what, with a lot of technology, some new design, probably some refined suspension. They did as much to an existing platform as they possibly could do. So my question for you is it enough?
You're right. I mean, Nissan was very much in the doldrums, and the products were pretty antiquated, really. And they're on a massive product cycle at the moment to basically pretty much refresh everything. I think what's the Rogue was really the first fruits of this, of their kind of big selling vehicles, which came out last year. And that's actually a pretty good thing. Let down, as you say, by like an older engine and transmission, but the interior is nice. It looks good. And the Frontier and Pathfinder, I think, are building on. The Frontier is a good-looking truck.
Yeah.
And we haven't driven it yet, but Carlos was – we just had a good look at it, and Carlos did the film, and he came back pretty impressed with it. I think it looks – you know, it looks good. The interior is a big step forward there. You know, they're really making progress with this stuff, and they have to because, you know, historically they – like the Rogue sold on value, and, you know, there's so little margin in small SUVs anyway that you really don't want to be selling on value. And as a used buyer, say, oh, you can buy the Rogue used. Well, yeah, but that's just because it's cheap, really. It's not where they need to be. And yeah, I hope that, you know, the Z car will give them a bit of an image boost, but, you know, it's a bit of a niche thing. Things like the Frontier need to do well. And, you know, it's off to a good start, I think.
The, you know, speaking of the Z as a halo car, other than the GTR, it's just sort of the more, you know, attainable halo car. The 370Z that's been out for quite some time now, was that considered successful for Nissan? I mean, they've always had it. I mean, I don't know how many they need to sell for them to be happy with it. Or do they keep it on because it still did bring people to the brand? Like, do you think that was a successful vehicle?
Well, it's funny. We were thinking of doing a feature on like the cars that you didn't know are still being built. And yeah. Certainly like the 370Z would have been in there. It's probably just stopping, isn't it? But I mean, I went on the launch of the 350Z, which was like before they brought out 370.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fundamentally, there's a lot of, you know, still all the same parts. And I think I was 12, you know, that was like, that was that was getting on for like 20 years ago. That car has just existed forever. And you know, it's probably they paid off the R&D many years ago. So they just thought, oh, we'll just keep pumping them out and a few people will buy them here or there. And that's the problem. That's kind of been Nissan's journey for the last decade or more, that, you know, these things have just aged and they haven't replenished the range. They haven't moved with the time. So I don't know about the Z. I think people like us get quite excited by it, but you know, the sales of coupes like that are so small now. I just don't know whether it's enough to really give them that kind of brand lift that they're hoping for. I hope it is, but you know.
Yeah, but you know what though? I mean, keeping that car around now, you know, for like you said, 350Z, 370Z, this new Z that's coming out still has a little bit of a legacy thing going on, and you know, this new Z is still what largely based on the 370Z platform, which I don't know if that was new or if that was on the 350. So this
platform, I think it was on the 350, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you know. If Nissan can get away with making revisions to an existing platform, which I listen, that used to be like a big faux pas. You go, hey, you know, this is, you know, you've got 5 years on this platform. You can't do it anymore. We need something new. But now we're changing things over time. Like we're evolving things over time where, how to explain it? More like technology, and like now all these cars have over-the-air updates, and we can revise things and fix things just while it's parked in your garage, just sitting there, or if an EV's plugged in or something. It's these little changes. You don't have to say, "Hey, if the 2022 Nissan Z isn't that great." We would write it off and go, now we're screwed for the next 5 years with this car. But car companies now are going, no. We're going to give you the 22 and we're going to make some changes for 23 and 24 and 25. I mean, honestly, we see it now with things like when the Toyota Supra came out, and then the next year it came out with a whole bunch more horsepower and it made a huge difference. But even something like Nissan GTR, every year or two, it seemed GTR got a little more horsepower. It was 480 horsepower, it was 500 or something, or 520, and then you know the Nismos are 600, and then it performed so well when it came out. And then they said, well, we know where we want on our handling and our 0 to 60 and our performance. Now for the next 10 years, we're just going to make it more comfortable. But without losing those performance attributes, right? Because you get into first-gen GTR and you're like, oh, this cooler, the car is fun and it's got all the PlayStation interface thing going on. But the screen's a little small and there's no CarPlay and it rides a little bumpy and it's a little harsh and that, you know, you hear that transaxle making all kinds of noise. So then Nissan's MO was like, great, let's fix all of those things, but keep the performance as batshit crazy as it is. So I think a lot of car companies are doing that now, right? Just these small revisions each year. Honestly,
it sounds like you're describing Dodge.
Yeah, right. Like Dodge has done the same thing. And some companies talk about it all the time and some companies don't. I mean, I don't necessarily follow the evolution of the Tesla Model S, but I feel like that basically looks roughly the same as it has since it debuted, and now it's been many, many years. But I never think of hey, is this year better than another year than another? I just think whatever the newest one is the better one, right? If you just said 19 or 20, I go 20's better.
I think the only I think you're right to a large extent. I think the only problem is one of perception, because actually, if you look at the Z car, if they launch this and initially you get that kind of big wave of publicity and everybody goes out and drives it, and if everybody decides it's a disappointment, it's really hard to row back from that.
Right.
So once everybody's driven it for the first time and said, then actually, you know, if you put a bit of Supra is a good example. Everybody's a bit like, And then, all right, we're going to throw another 250 horsepower at it. But it's hard to change perceptions then. It's hard to kind of reinvent the wheel because everybody's already formed an opinion And, you know, it's no longer new. It's no longer the shiny cover story. So, you know, my own view based probably on experience is you only get really one crack at this. And even something like Porsche with a 718 Cayman, you know, we all went and drove that four-cylinder car and we're like, you know, rubbish engine, really, you know, rather have the old one. And now they brought out the six-cylinder, but it's like $100,000. And it's hard then to change the perception of stuff.
Yeah.
Once you've made a mistake, it's hard. I mean, it's not anything in life.
And you know what? And in the long run, it does affect the values. You know, like 911s have always held their value pretty well. But Boxster? Nah.
Yeah, unless it's a GT or a Spider, a nice GT4 or a Spider. Something yeah. Like,
It's definitely got to be a special version to get to that.
We're actually buying a couple of cheap cars for driver training. So we put all our team through driver training and we realized that we need to buy a couple of cheap cars that we can really have fun with because, you know, like we can't reuse a GT500 or a Corvette for driver training because it's just kind of all a bit daft now and it'll cost a fortune.
Yeah.
So we're looking at buying a couple. Next time I come on, I'll talk to you about this because we're in the process. It'd actually be a great one to talk about. Like we've got 7,500 for a rear-wheel drive car, 7,500 for a front-wheel drive car. What do you buy? And yeah. There's probably got more time than we got time for now. I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, sorry. Train of thought was the you know, a Boxster. You can get a $7,500 Boxster, like an early Boxster that's actually still in decent condition.
And, yeah.
You know, that's kind of on the list, which is crazy to think about. You'd panic if anything went wrong, like a gearbox. But, yeah, $7,500 Boxster, they're out there.
I'm just surprised you guys have driver training.
Well, you've seen me drive, right?
Yeah. Well, now you drive like an old lady because you got your daughter in the car all the time.
Yeah, there's a built-in G meter whenever my wife gets in the car. Yeah,
yeah, right. Just slow it down.
Anything above 0.001 is immediately met with retribution.
Yeah, she brings like a G meter in her pocket. It's like having like a breathalyzer, but it's just a G meter. She's like, if I'm getting in the car, she puts it up on the dash. If this thing turns red in any corner or acceleration or deceleration, you need to stop the car. Think about what you've done.
It's not even a gadget. It's just built in. It's just part of the system.
It's just part of built into your.
It's just
your
a built-in human resource. Yeah, she'll kill me.
Before we wrap up, let me tell you guys again about our friends at Dodge. Dodge has officially opened orders of that new 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat, the most powerful SUV ever. If you guys got an order in, Dodge is telling us they're going to be fulfilling every single order. So it was exclusive for 2021. They were going to make 2,000 units, but they want to make every order fulfilled. It's a 710 horsepower. It's got this new aggressive exterior styling. If you drive the bright red one like I do, people will notice you. It has that new driver-centric cockpit. And you know what? We've been reading the ad for a while, and now that I got into it, I actually do love the screen in that thing. It's good size. It's in the dash. It's not stuck on. It looks good. All buyers will receive a full day of pro instruction at the Radford Racing School. I highly recommend it if you get one of these things. They should make it mandatory. They should be delivery can only be taking at the driving school is the way they should the way you should do these things. You know, Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. The first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule a test drive. Anyway, so before we wrap it up, you did mention the Bentley. I'm a fan as well. I haven't driven the new Flying Spur. Been in some of the Continental GTs. You know... Similarly, I do like, you've heard us talk about it, I do like the Rolls-Royce, I like the Wraith, I like the Ghost, that magic carpet ride that they have is fantastic. I'm probably not the demo for it, but, you know, road tripping one of those things.
I don't know if anyone listening to this show is
the demo for it, but... Oh, well, if you get a chance to drive one, you will absolutely love it. So anybody listening, if you know somebody who has one, go for a ride in one. But
they are lovely, but I'm with you, Matt. I think there's a perception thing with these things. I don't know whether it's – even in L.A., I just feel a bit – I feel so self-conscious turning up, particularly at the moment where, you know, everybody's – a lot of people have had a really tough time economically, and that's – you know, it's – I don't know. It's like having Gucci written across your swept to in, you know, like in big letters. I don't know. It just feels, just makes me feel a bit self-conscious.
Well, that's why my hoodie is zipped up. I don't want you guys to see my shirt. It doesn't have that on there. But anyway, so your thoughts on the Bentley, though, is to be expected. You love the vehicle. It's great. How does it rank up to the previous models?
I think I prefer it as a sedan than I do as a coupe, just because the coupe feels so sort of big and heavy. And, you know, the coupe is basically a sedan in a coupe body. And so, therefore, it kind of works better for a sedan. I think the proportions look better. And it's just, it's in Bentley terms, it is actually reasonably understated as well. It's not like the old Mulsanne where it kind of, you know, the nose arrived half an hour before you did. So it's you know, you can make it look pretty sporty as well. If you go for the V8, which is the one we had in, it sounds great as well. And, you know, they're a lovely thing. And maybe in sort of 5 years' time, because the residual values on those things, they do depreciate pretty heavily. As a used bike, it start becomes a bit more attractive. I'd actually love like a 90s Bentley or something just to bumble around in. You know, something that's a bit older and a bit less ostentatious is just, they're just a nice way to travel.
It is. It's super comfortable. And you're right. Even the ones that are 20 years old were super comfortable back then. So anyway, before we wrap it up, Bill, you had some mods on the truck. I saw you posting up on the Instagram on the TRX.
Yeah, man. I'm fortunate enough to get the front and rear bumpers and got more lights than I ever imagined I'd have on any of my vehicles cumulatively. They are all installed on this damn truck. But, you know, I got a shout out to Rigid Industries. They're hooking me up pretty good with it. And ADD with the first guys to come out with the bumpers and pretty much any aftermarket parts for that TRX. So check out Instagram. You'll see him later today. And hopefully it makes the damn thing faster.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to do that. I don't know if it needs that. But I saw the
photos.
And
I'm going to jump something to this. And it might be like a Lego, but I'll jump something.
Right on. I saw the photos that you posted of the gear before you had it installed. But yeah, if you post some photos of the thing done, we'd love to check it out. Curious to see how the bumpers turned out for that.
We need to have a conversation about lighting, man. It is a whole different game. You know, I had to reach out to Richard Waitis to really get a tutorial as to what the hell's going on with truck lighting and why they do it, and, you know, comparing companies out there. But the stuff that they're doing with Rigid, and if other companies are doing stuff similar to it, it's amazing. Not only are you paying for it, but the technology is through the roof. I mean, I get a GPS tracker on it to where, you know, with the turning of the wheels at certain speeds, the lights turn with it. And it's just a whole different avenue for me. So.
Richard Waitis, it's our buddy from Magnaflow. He stopped by my warehouse the other day over at the Matt Cave and brought his truck, his Chevy Colorado, with the gear and the package and the overlanding truck with all the lights pointing in all these directions. And I just thought it'd be kind of funny, like as a joke, I got another set of LED off-road lights, this one from Baja Designs, and I sent it to him. And then and I thought it was going to be like, oh, you're making fun of me. I got lights all over my truck. He's like, thanks. I really needed these.
Exactly. So
I guess you can't add.
There's no amount of lights there's no amount that you can be overboard with. I mean, my God, it's amazing. It's a whole different world. But, you know, I won't be hitting any deer anymore.
So. Yeah, well, that's good. The last time you did, you were in a McLaren.
You just been blind.
Yes. Enough. Now I'll just roll right over.
All right. Before, let's just wrap things up. We were talking about that stuff. So follow Goldberg. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter. Goldberg95, Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You can follow me at Motorator on social media. And Alistair Weaver. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weaver on Cars on Instagram.
Love it.
Love it. Anything else? Any final thoughts, Alistair? Go watch the Durango video.
Go watch the Durango video. Yeah, nobody can. You should see me going into Starbucks. Like, I've given up saying Alistair. That's why the Twitter handle doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Alex. No, I'm not Alex. No, I'm really not.
Yeah.
Alex.
Oh. Alex, just tell them when your name is Alex when you get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Path of least resistance.
Always a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us. The website is edmonds.com. You can find all of his great news and all the films he's putting out. edmonds.com/roadnoise is the place to go. And, you know, of course, follow them on social media as well. Edmonds is all over all their social media platforms, so follow them as well. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.